everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two awesome sponsors for you. One of our favorite sponsors, WP Migrate DB Pro, which is a WordPress plugin, which is for syncing your databases between live and local sites. So you just like click a button from your dashboard and it does that from your local site to your live site. It's kind of amazing. And it's one of my favorite plugins ever. In Environments for Humans, who are doing their SVG Summit. That's really the URL to svgsummit.com, which is coming up January 21st. It's an online conference, meaning it's kind of affordable and easy to attend and really fun and highly topical. And, you know, it's all about SVG. So we'll tell you more about both those things later in the show. But for now, let's kick it off, Dave.
Hey there, Shopper Maniacs. Welcome back to 2016.
Yeah.
The year of
what is
amazingness, empowerment. I've been listening to self-help tapes all Christmas break. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, this is our first show back from, I guess, you know, whatever we call this, season four, season five. We don't really have seasons, but sometimes we take a break, especially around the holiday seasons, and then come back. This is episode 198, which is just kind of amazing, isn't it? And amazingly, the first time we've ever had on a very special guest and friend of mine, Ash Dryden. Hi, Ash.
Hey.
Yay. Got the horns.
Got it.
Love it.
Ash, are you empowered and driven to meet your success goals in 2016?
You know, I'm one of those people that doesn't make resolutions because I feel like it's setting me up for failure. So I just prefer to be awesome 24/7 nonstop. I mean, no pressure to you guys, but.
All right. That's a fair.
I make my goals every single day by the time I rest my head on the pillow. Ash is I just know her through being at the same conferences a whole bunch throughout many, many years. We've found ourselves at similar things and kind of became friends that way from bar camp type things to other hackathon-y type things. And so you're involved with tech, but in, you know, all kinds of different interesting ways, right? Do you want to give us a bit of your story?
Yeah, it's long and complicated and weird. So I've
tried.
I've been a programmer for 14 or 15 years, mostly in the open source space. And over the past 4 or 5 years, I've focused a lot of my time on increasing the discourse around diversity and inclusion in tech, and more recently, also the gaming industry. So I do a lot of writing. I run a traveling conference series called AlterConf. I work on Fund Club, FUND Club. So we raise money for marginalized people and their projects every single month in tech. And I'm a White House fellow, LGBTQ tech and innovation fellow.
Yeah, that is a ton of stuff. And I'm sure we have lots to talk about each one of those things, which we will check off one by one. So you exist in this, the intersection of diversity and tech.
Yes.
Yeah. And gaming.
Yep. More recently gaming because of AlterConf. There's so much crossover between different roles and the experiences that people find themselves in both industries that there's just so much overlap.
Mm-hmm. Gaming comes up on this show only usually in the context of like, oh, sometimes some of these technologies can also be used for games like Canvas or JavaScript or VR or whatever. But we often don't, like, the cultures feel fairly separate, but in your experience there's a lot of crossover. I mean, I guess it's people that sit in chairs and look at computers as a job.
Yeah. And I mean, with the skill sets of being a programmer in the tech industry, it doesn't take too much to move over to the gaming industry and vice versa. So there are a lot of similar roles, whether it's, you know, engineers and art people, designers. So you see a lot of crossover in those kinds of things, but also in the kind of lay of the land, the lack of diversity, the homogeneity that you see in tech, you also see in gaming. And more recently, the issues have bubbled up in both and kind of overflowed into each other, where we're seeing a lot of the discussion cross over and back between the two.
Right. I mean, last year you couldn't avoid things like Gamergate, which were just enormous things.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah. Interesting. So there's, I guess let's start with kind of your career in a sense, in that you're, I don't know, I find you highly entrepreneurial, and that the way that you make your career is super diversified and comes from all kinds of different angles, like consulting. So somebody out there was listening and was interested in, I don't know, upping their diversity game at their company, you are open to that kind of work, right? And do it sometime.
Yep. That's actually my major paid gig. So I work with companies and conferences and open source communities to look at what they're doing right now that could maybe use some changes, and how they can meet their goals when it comes to having more diversity and being more inclusive of, you know, different kinds of people and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, if people want to read more about or go, I mean, there's literally ashdryden.com/consulting where you can look at that kind of thing. Some of our conversations in the past have been like, it's kind of funny, sad that people can, I'm sure you get this a lot more than I do. They'll write to me and be like, we want some advice from you on this diversity stuff, and kind of just assume it's going to be free, or that like that you helping out is just, it's helping the world. So like, why wouldn't you do it for free kind of thing? Do you still get that kind of garbage, or do you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, because part of the issue is a lot of people don't see the value in this kind of thing, especially if it's not something that directly impacts them, right? They're not the ones that are struggling to find a job and to succeed and to make a career because they are up against all these obstacles. They see it as more of a public service, which, you know, many people do provide that for free, but I strongly believe that everybody should be compensated fairly for their labor. So that's something that I do is consulting, and then I release a lot of the things that I write online for free, so that people at least can get to that 101 stage where they understand what the issues actually are and how they can begin to tackle them.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting that people, when they hire you, often they're not aware of it to some degree. They've leveled up to the ability that they know that they might need to get in touch with somebody like you to help them go beyond 101, but are struggling to, they don't feel it themselves, right? And their success metric is kind of undefined.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people that's the case. I mean, when we talk about diversity and inclusion, it seems like a really huge, like, insurmountable problem. How do we tackle this issue? How can we possibly ever hire the people that we want to hire and, you know, to change what it looks like on our about page if, you know, these people, you know, supposedly do not exist in the industry, which isn't true. But a lot of people feel like, I don't even know where to start. You know, what piece do I pick up? And what if I make a mistake? So a lot of it is just for the people who want to change and make things better, who are my clients. I don't do the what I call like disaster recovery, like you had a horrible incident publicly and now you want to make it better. Like, there are other people that do that. I do this because I want to make the industry better for people like me and my friends to have a place to succeed. So that starts with, you know, working with companies that have good intentions, that want to make this better, that want to learn, so it won't be an uphill battle for me. Because on the whole, I mean, this is also a personal issue to me as a woman, as a queer person, as a person with disabilities. Like, I want to see a place, I want to work with people who respect me as a person. And if I don't feel I'm getting that, then it's not worth my time or any amount of money, honestly.
Right. You think some people in the disaster recovery thing are looking for a PR firm, not to necessarily change themselves. I mean, maybe they are, but yeah, I could see how you'd want to stay away from that.
Yep. And I mean, there are plenty of people who do that work, so I'm happy to refer, but it's not something that I will personally do.
So, the you know, we haven't said the word recruiting, but that's a big part of this, right? Let's say you know, there's, I'm sure a ton of people listen to the show. I have a company. Dave works for a company. Dave always opens his talks with, we're not hiring, but let's say in a theoretical future, Dave, you were hiring. Is it, as Ash said, it's not true that there's not diverse people in the field, but you might hear someone say like, well, okay, we posted this job posting and we got, you know, 10 candidates and 9 of them were white dudes, right? That's like a thing that happens. I don't know. What's the kind of solution there, or is there one, or what?
Yeah. So the first thing to know is that marginalized people do exist in the industry. Many of them are gainfully employed because everybody in the industry is scrambling to find people like them, right? That they have senior experience, they've been in the industry for a long time. Those people definitely do exist. They're just few and far between because we have a huge issue with people leaving the industry. So what I say to those people, you know, we're looking to hire, people from, you know, many more different kinds of identity groups than we currently have, is take a step back. That is not the first step. Recruiting is not the first step. What is it about your culture that lends itself to being homogenous? How do you work together? How do you interact? What are the benefits and perks that you provide? What kinds of requirements do you put on people's work days? Do you have any kind of flexibility when it comes to somebody has a sick kid or somebody has a chronic illness and they have to go to the doctor often? Like, do you make allowances for that kind of thing? So the first step is really like assessing the current situation that you're in. Take a look at your own house before you invite, you know, people into, you know, it burning down. Because the worst thing is recruiting costs so much time and money that if you go out and hire somebody and you spend so much time and money doing that, you bring them in and they realize, hey, this is not for me. This is a terrible place to work. You know, my coworkers are making terrible jokes and offensive comments in Slack and I just can't handle that. And then they leave and then they tell their friends. Like, the Whisper Network is very strong with marginalized people in the tech industry because we have to watch each other's backs. There's so many companies out there that are very hostile and just not welcoming at all to marginalized people. So take a look at what's going on right now and get that stuff resolved. Then once you actually have a healthy, productive, inclusive culture, then you start looking at recruiting. And I look at it from beginning to end, right? Like, what does your outward marketing say? What do you say on Twitter? What do the people that you send to conferences, what are they like? What are they doing? Who are they interacting with? What are your job ads say? How long does your interview process take and what does it look like? What does your onboarding and mentoring look like? And how do you do negotiation? You know, there's so many different moving pieces to this that it's hard to say, do this one thing and you'll be wildly successful. Wow. Because we've gone so many years with doing what has gotten us into the situation that we're now, that it's very hard for us to see our way out of it. So we have to take a step back and figure out where the roots of the problems are before we can start making any kind of, you know, visible move towards changing things.
Is there some like really clear kind of light at the end of the tunnel that you can show people? Like, you know, you have a lot of work. Okay, company X, you have a lot of work ahead of you. There's, you know, I know you're interested in this. We can get there if we examine the whole process from start to finish, like you said, and do all this work. At the end of that, are they, you know, the answer of course is yes, but help me get there. Is the company a better company for it? What is it that's better at the end of that?
Oh, absolutely. So not only will it be easier to hire going forward, but you'll retain employees much longer, which anybody who's in recruiting or HR can tell you. It costs like more than a year's salary to recruit someone or to lose someone. So the more you can, you know, create loyalty and create an environment that is that provides great opportunities to all different kinds of people, the better it is for that retention. In addition, when you start changing things to increase diversity and inclusion, you have this awesome effect of actually making things better for everyone, right? So if we have a new parent who's in the office and they need flexible time because they have to take, you know, this new kid to the doctor often, it's hard to be away from, you know, the child often. They might have to, you know, breastfeed in the office or, you know, every few hours, whatever it is. If we extend that flexibility to all of our other employees, then that means that everybody's lives and everybody's working days are better because we've decided to be more inclusive to this one person, right? Everybody benefits from that. So on a personal level, we all benefit. On a financial level, tons of studies have shown that, you know, diverse companies make more money. We have a greater market share, all of these kinds of things. So on almost every single axis, when you work to make things better in this way, you're increasing what your company is able to do and how long it's going to last.
It sounds like there's almost no downside to it. Could you make the argument that the thing that you build is better as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there is one downside, and that when you don't have people that are all the same, that all come from the same backgrounds and speak the same way and understand things in the exact same way, communication becomes a little bit harder. But the longer that you're in that environment, the easier it becomes. So that's the only real downside at the beginning when you start doing this work.
Yeah, there's some communication challenges. I can see that. So in the world of recruiting, there's this thing that I don't know, I feel like gets thrown a lot around a lot. When you're recruiting somebody, maybe they have good technical skills or whatever, but you know, when your people make hiring decisions based on lots of different things, and one of the things that gets thrown out is a culture fit, right? Do you hear that
often? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it sometimes means, like, I don't know, how well do we get along? Are we the same? Like, do we like the same kind of movies? I don't know, because assuming if we do, that we'll be friends, and friends make better coworkers too, or something like that.
Are you good at skateboarding? How high can you ollie?
Right.
Those are big concerns I have.
But which on the surface feels kind of fun, right? Like, wouldn't it be fun to work with a bunch of like-minded people? And then sometimes feels dangerous too, because that's what maybe gets us here. Do I have any of that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the big issues that we have when we're interviewing is we tend to use that time not to discern whether this candidate has the skills that we need for them to accomplish the job that they're interviewing for, but how well do I get along with them? Do I like them as a person? Do they laugh at my jokes? Do I laugh at their jokes? Do we go to the same school? You know, do we have some of the same experiences? Do I respect them because they worked at a company that whose name I recognize? You know, all of those things, while not bad on their own, can create that homogeneity that we're trying to get away from. And also, when you consider the fact that, you know, when we're interviewing somebody, we want to know, first and foremost, can you do the job? We're not tracking that in any kind of reasonable way. How are we determining whether, you know, person has skills A, B, and C versus we like the same band? You know, it's a very hard thing, because as people, you know, we want to find that common ground. We want to find something that we're both excited, and especially in an environment such as tech, where we often talk about passion, right? Being passionate about our jobs and passionate about what we do, and enough that, you know, after we leave work, we're going to go home and do it as well. Like, we want to share that passion with other people. So it's very difficult unless you're intentionally keeping track of why you like a candidate and what you don't like about a candidate, that our biases, our unconscious biases, don't come into play.
I have a question. How much does location kind of factor into this? I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Revision Path podcast, but it's a podcast that kind of, you know, seeks to answer the where are all the Black designers and developers questions. And after listening to it, it's like, well, the answer is Atlanta and Dallas and flyover cities, quote unquote. And so I'm kind of wondering if you know, location factors into diversity hires. Like in San Francisco, for example, you'll probably have really great LGBTQ representation, but really poor racial diversity. Do you see that happening, or is that sort of a problem?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. When we're talking about marginalized people as a whole, and when I say marginalized people, in case you're not familiar, these are any groups that aren't represented in the majority in our community or whose needs or wants are kind of pushed to the side. So we're talking about people of genders that aren't male, and there are more than two genders, that's important to note. People of color, so basically any race or ethnicity that is not white, or European ancestry, that kind of thing. People with disabilities, people who don't speak English as a first language, all of these kinds of things. People who aren't American citizens. This is a very wide range of groups that we're looking at. So when we're talking about marginalized people, you have to understand a couple different things. One, marginalized people tend to make much less than their more privileged counterparts. So if we're looking at the salary difference between men and women on average, women make about 78% of what men make. When you add one more factor to that, when you add race, people of color make half of what white men make. So we can see how being able to move to another city without our support networks, having to afford an expensive place like New York City, especially when we're talking about the more expensive places like Manhattan, the gentrifying areas of Brooklyn and that kind of thing. San Francisco, incredibly expensive. Chicago, very expensive, even though it's very racially diverse. It becomes very hard to attract different marginalized groups to those areas when they know going into it they're going to be making less money than their more privileged counterparts and still having to afford the same rent. So that becomes very difficult.
That's understandable.
It'd be interesting to hear a little bit about your writing. It kind of looks like you have two books kind of cooking up here. One of them is called The Diverse Team and one of them is called Diverse Conferences. Is that right?
Inclusive Events. Yep.
Inclusive Events. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of people, so I've been organizing conferences for, 12 or something years. And like I said, I also organize AlterConf, and we have on average a conference every single month in a different city somewhere around the world. So I get asked a lot about my expertise in those things. Like, how do we have an event that more different kinds of people show up to, that we have more diversity on stage, that can be successful as well? So a lot of that just pulls together all of my knowledge for like selecting venues, the language that you use around, your CFP and that kind of thing, how much you charge for tickets, what kinds of food you get. So it kind of pulls all of that information together so that, you start organizing a conference and you can understand from beginning to end what has to be in play, every month before the event. The other book, The Diverse Team, focuses on much more of my consulting experience. So looking at our businesses, what can we do to increase diversity and inclusion? What does it mean to change our culture? What is our culture? What are our values? Why do we want, to increase diversity? What is stopping us? How do we holistically look at the situation in such that we become good citizens of the community in not only increasing diversity internally, but fostering the success of marginalized people in the industry itself?
Cool, cool. So, yeah, people should be interested in those. There are links to them at Ash's website, ashdryden.com. And it looks like they're going to be on Lean Pub. So leanpub.com/diverseconfs and the-diverse-team. Very cool. Look forward to those. The conference is particularly interesting. Let's talk about that in a second. I'm going to do a shout out to one of our sponsors, WP Migrate DB Pro. There's links to this in the show notes. If you want to remember this plugin and get there, just come to our site to this show and click on the link from there, or Google Delicious Brains. Pretty funny name for a business, but that's the company that makes this particular plugin. So, they say stop wasting time on migrations, eliminate the pain that is migrating a WordPress database, which it is kind of a pain in the butt. So my experience is that you need to, you know, you work locally because you're a, you know, you're a good developer. You know, work with version control and work on new features of a site locally. So you're not just, you know, going commando or whatever. And we've gotten past that, I feel like, as a community for the most part. So that's wonderful. But in WordPress, it's not just the files. It's not just the theme files and the CSS and the JavaScript or whatever. It's the database, too. It's the data that you publish. Gets stored in MySQL. That's harder to move. It's not just a flat file that you can FTP up, you know? It's a service that runs locally and on your live machine. And there's command line tools for, or and not even tools, but just commands for, like, exporting a database to an SQL file and then running it on your local machine. But it's not even what you... A, that's a pain in the butt. For one thing, but it's not, you don't even want an exact copy because the exact copy is going to have all the URLs in it that point to the live stuff. It's going to have settings in it that are based on the URL of the live site. What you want is kind of an altered copy that's mostly the same, but has the correct stuff in it for the local database. That's what this plugin does. And it's just, you know, it's a paid plugin, but you just install it locally and live, and it ends up being kind of a one click thing for keeping those databases in sync, which is so awesome. Because a lot of times you know, you want to be working with the latest stuff from your live site, but the stuff on your local machine is 6 months old or whatever. Let that not be the case. Use WP Migrate DB Pro. And it's also important to mention that it works with the media files too. So if it's like you have a blog post and you have five, you know, images that you've uploaded that go in that, it will move those too for you with an add-on, the media files add-on for it. So pretty cool. Thanks for the sponsorship of the show. Let's learn a little bit more about AlterConf. That's alterconf.com. Ash throws this event, and there's been a lot of them. They're all over the world. Give us the you already did a little bit, but kind of the point, the purpose, the pitch for AlterConf.
Yeah, for sure. So I've spoken at an ungodly number of conferences over the past few years. Traveling the world, ran into Chris a ton of times, but traveling the world, going to all different kinds of events across tech and open source communities and design and kind of all over the place. And there were a lot of painful moments, a lot of times when, you know, I'm the only marginalized speaker, and I'm a white woman. So like, as far as marginalized people go, I'm like the least endangered of all animals, right? So I'm the only marginalized speaker. I might be one of very few marginalized people in attendance. And people say terrible things to you, or you can't eat any food because, you know, no consideration was made for dietary restrictions or anything like that. And I'm hard of hearing. So oftentimes I can't even hear what is being asked of me if, you know, it's an interview style thing, or if people are asking questions in the audience, or even the speakers themselves. So it's a very frustrating experience, and just feeling different and alone and kind of lonely. And I wanted to create an event that was what I wanted to see. Like if I had an ideal event, you know, with the kinds of things, the kinds of critical things that people would talk about, what would that look like? And so I created AlterConf, which is a traveling event series. We go to a different city across the world once a month. And the idea behind that is many marginalized people can't afford to go to conferences because the expense is so great, not only in the ticket itself, but traveling to get there, the hotel, the food, childcare, or other dependent care, not being able to get time off of work, not being able to travel to the place where the conference is being held because it's not a safe country or a safe state for them to be because of who they are. So all of those things kind of added up to me deciding to make a traveling event where we bring the conference to people. And all of our speakers are marginalized people. And they talk about what's important to them. You know, tell us more about what your experience has been, awesome projects that you're working on, critical things that you want to see change, or how we can make the industry better as a whole in both the tech and gaming industries. So we have people talk about all different kinds of things, like what tech money and gentrification are doing to Seattle. That's one of my favorite talks that I've seen over the past year and a half. Or like how you can use Kickstarter to fund, you know, your game development, since many of the games that are on the cutting edge and are by indie developers aren't being funded in the exact same way as the bigger games are. So we cover a very wide range of topics about all different kinds of marginalization, how you can make your company better, how you can throw awesome events, how you can change your policies to make it better for people who are parents, what it means to be a person who is autistic that comes to work every day and struggles to communicate with people, being deaf in the workplace and not having anybody else around you who is able to effectively communicate with you. All of those different kinds of things that I wanted to see, because I wanted to learn more about where other people are coming from. And I wanted to know more about what I could do better as, especially like I own two businesses, what I could do better as a business owner and as a member of, you know, the tech industry. What can I do to improve the situation? So we bring all these speakers together locally from each city. We pay them, which is super important to us. Everybody gets paid. Last year, we paid out $50,000 to both our speakers and our freelancers, who are also marginalized people. We provide free childcare, live captioning, sign language interpreters at every single event, inclusive meals, so everybody knows that they can eat, even if they have religious restrictions that aren't common or they're allergic to things that aren't common. Everybody, you know, is cared for in that way. All of our venues are ADA accessible. And we've even paid money to increase the accessibility of certain venues. We're always on public transit, and our ticket pricing is sliding scale. So you can pay from $0 up to $100 to attend the exact same event. Not a different experience if you're paying less or if you're paying no money at all. There are no hoops to jump through if you can't afford a ticket. You just pick it up and you come.
Wow. So some of the reasons you might want to go is because you might find a community there. You might find people, I don't know, that are, I don't know, your people, you know, and you'll also learn, right? You'll level up. This is beyond 101 stuff in this arena.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't have the kind of 101 talks that I have so often given at conferences, because many people in the industry don't quite have the vocabulary right now around diversity and inclusion, right? Oftentimes when we talk about diversity, we're talking about where are the women and specifically where are the white women. So I wanted an event that moved beyond that. And because I wasn't seeing anybody else pushing those boundaries, I think Model View Culture does a really great job of having awesome marginalized people write super well about their different experiences and analyzing the culture and that kind of thing. But I thought it was really important to bring marginalized people together across communities to show employers that, like, we do exist in this space and, you know, our voices are worth hearing and our labor is worth paying for. So it kind of creates a community for marginalized people, shows the community that we exist, and gives us an opportunity to get speaking experience where we might not have otherwise had some. So very many of our speakers are first-time speakers.
Might go on to have a larger speaking career.
Exactly. We don't require that our speakers have any speaking experience because we know that so many marginalized people don't have that experience. And we record all of the talks so people can then take them. And when they apply at another conference, say, here's, you know, me talking at AlterConf. So now they have that documented experience from a big name conference.
I suppose in a meta kind of way, too, it's like other conferences, you know, you provide a good model for them to listen up, other conferences, check out some of the stuff AlterConf is doing. I remember maybe I just overheard it on Twitter. I can't remember how I came across, but sometimes you have security at the events too, right? Because the kind of marginalized people sometimes need it, or you need it, or because that down to the security guard that they send you might not be ideal.
Well, I mean, we are very careful that everything we do intentionally centers marginalized people. So every decision we make, we hire security for every single one of our events. We always work with vendors, not just security, but all of our vendors are locally owned by marginalized people, and many of them are unionized. But when it comes to security, we always make sure that the guards they send us are marginalized people themselves. So they'll send us guards that are people of color, are queer people, are people with disabilities. We make sure that they are not dressed like police, which is very important because there are very many reasons that marginalized people are afraid of the police. So we don't want to create unease when you're right when you're walking in the door, right? Like the security should be there to keep you safe and not to make you scared. So they're not dressed like cops. They do not have weapons. They're basically there just to take care of, you know, any of the people who show up that, you know, might make the event unsafe. And we have had that before, and security has acted well, and those things have been taken care of. So no one gets hurt either emotionally or physically.
Sweet. So check all this out and attend at alterconf.com. What do you got, Dave?
Ash, I just like, I guess my question is, do you see AlterConf as a sustainable model for conferences? I know we kind of mentioned that. I'm just, all these things you're providing, it's amazing. It sounds like a utopia, but is it like you're paying speakers, you're doing these, you know, I could easily like hear a conference organizer be like, well, I can't do all that. I have this cool building that was built in the 1800s that we have to throw it in because it's amazing. And there's no wheelchair accessibility. Sorry. Do you see this as like a sustainable model? I know, I mean, you're doing like six of them a year or something. I'm just curious. Do you think this is something that could extend to every tech conference?
Oh, absolutely. And I expect it to. Like, part of this is being a good role model.
Okay.
So we throw 9 to 11 conferences a year in a different city with different vendors and, you know, different communities that we have to reach out to personally. And it's just me and my very, very part-time assistant. Our budget is between $8,000 and $12,000, and we do all of those things. So anytime a conference organizer comes to me and says, it's too hard, or we want to start off like really easy with the cheapest thing, I have to just look at them and sigh because we went from 0 to 60 right away. You know, we provided these things out of the gate. It was really important to us. And I think that if you make it important to your event, then you can see that these things are not as expensive as you think they are. I've worked with other conferences to help them provide childcare and get them in touch with the live captioner that we use and the company that we work with for our sign language interpreters. And they're surprised by how not expensive it is. Like, you definitely pay what it's worth. It's not cheap, but it's not going to blow your budget in the way you think it is. And like I said, our budget is $8,000 to $10,000 per event. We have basically one person organizing, and we are able to do all of those things. Pay everybody who's involved, reach out to all different kinds of marginalized communities, provide inclusive meals, security, sign language, captioning, childcare, accessible venues. There is absolutely no excuse that with a budget 10 or 20 times what we have that you cannot do those things.
So then it's $0 to $100 per attendee, and you're hundreds of attendees ish. And then is it corporate sponsorships kind of fill the void? Is that sort of the hope?
So,
budgetarily?
Yeah. So, we have, different, sponsors for every single event. And the ticket costs also help with that. AlterConf itself does not make any money off of our events. All of the money that we raise for each city goes right back into the community. From the money that we raise, every speaker gets paid a minimum of $200 US for a talk that's 5 to 25 minutes long. We've paid as much as $450. And like I said, that's, you know, with an $8,000 to $12,000 budget each. So we're able to cover those thanks to our sponsors, thanks to people helping us out finding venues. We have ambassadors, they're called, people who are local to the community, because we don't ever actually even walk through the venue until the day of, because we're not in that city. And in some cases, we're around the world. So we rely on local ambassadors who are also marginalized people to help us out with those things. But many times we can get free or discounted venues by telling people about what we're trying to do, or in exchange for sponsorship, or whatever they need that we're able to provide, short of like giving them our attendee list, which we don't allow. And yeah, I mean, we make it happen regardless. Every single month we throw a whole conference. So
then all the services or needs that need to be fulfilled, whether that's dietary or childcare, those are sort of on demand packages, I guess. Is that sort of how those work, or is it just baseline or?
So the only thing that is on demand is childcare. So we basically just need to know how many kids, what ages, and what their needs are 10 days before the event. So when you register, we ask you questions at checkout about what kind of accessibility needs beyond what we're providing. You know, if you need Portuguese to English translator or whatever it is, like, let us know and we'll try and make it happen. But food and everything, we always cater to everybody's needs every single time.
We have another conference coming up, drum roll, sponsor time. January 21st is the SVG Summit, which is as safe as your own home is, I suppose, because it's an online conference that you can attend from anywhere, you know, with your kind of laptop and an internet connection. The URL is svgsummit.com. Immerse yourself, they say, in a distinct, in-depth educational experience delivered by some of the top minds designing with SVG. I'm not a top mind with SVG, but I am speaking at it. I'm going to kind of close up and answer your questions and show off some cool SVG abilities and just kind of, have a you-rah-rah cheerleading SVG session at the end of this thing. So if you want to hear me speak at it, you can see that. They say, go beyond Google searches and out-of-date tutorials and ask questions directly to the presenters. Interact with the instructor and fellow attendees. Real-time Q&A sessions, which is true. I've been to a number of these, and you're looking at the presenter live, you're seeing their slides, but there's the other part of the screen is the chat room, which is you chatting with the instructor and the event runners and a fellow attendees there. It's kind of a, you know, it's like a live Slack room, only it's not Slack, it's their special thing. If you go to it, you get to go to the conference, but you get the recording of the entire conference, you know, that you can kind of play back in real time too, which is pretty cool. So that's svgsummit.com. And that we're talking with Ash Dryden. We are just learned a whole bunch about AlterConf. That's alterconf.com. I have a bunch more questions from Ash, but let's do the fund club thing first. The URL for that is joinfundclub.com. I'm a member of this. You want to tell us about it, Ed?
Yeah, so it's run by myself and Chandler Kane of Model View Culture, and we pick a different project that's run by marginalized people and for marginalized people in tech every single month, and we email it to you. So it's kind of like Cheese of the Month Club. We email it to you. You have a week to go and donate $100. Our target is people who are making 100K plus, so $100 a month wouldn't break the bank for them easily. And to really move the needle on a lot of these organizations that aren't getting the kind of funding that they should. So we funded things like Revision Path, which you mentioned earlier, Women of Color in Tech Chat, Hands Up United, which is doing a lot of really awesome work in St. Louis in the wake of everything that's happened in Ferguson. Tons of different things to help marginalized people of all stripes. That's another project that we kind of do on the side, because we want to raise awareness and to give the money to the people who are making a real difference.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It looks like it's gone nothing but up every single month.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Sweet.
Yeah. So the I'm a member of this. It's very, very easy thing to be a member of. You just get a email every month that says you, because you're a member of this club, you are required to donate $10,000 to this an organization that's chosen by, I guess I hate to admit it, but I'm not aware of all these things. It's just not, I don't know everything in the world. So I rely on people like Ash to, I guess I shouldn't say rely, but you know what I mean? Like you know who needs it more than I do. And I think that's awesome. So I get an email that says like, this organization is awesome and could use the help. And then I donate and then I click the link that said I did, and I'll get one next month. And the fact is I do make more than $100,000 a year. So I should be in this club. Dang it.
and that's awesome. Like we've loved seeing the different kinds of things that the projects we funded have been able to accomplish because, people take 5 minutes out of their week. It's just once a month. They take 5 minutes and they go in. They donate directly to the organization. So we don't touch any of the money. We just tell you where to donate. But it's awesome because you know that the organization has been vetted. The people that are involved with these organizations are, they have really great track records of accomplishing amazing things. And they should be better known, right? And part of our idea around doing this is that now you know what those organizations are. So when your friends go to you and say, I would love to give money to, to help out this cause, but I have no idea who needs it. Like, where do I find them? So we run Fund Club, and we also run the Twitter account, which is related to it, Fund Better Tech. And we, highlight Indiegogo campaigns and people that are, doing fundraisers, their once a year fundraiser, whatever it is, things that make the industry better. And the money is going to the people who know what they need the most. So you don't have to worry about somebody else's thinking, oh, I think this is what, group X needs, and just doing it. It's actually being done by the people who are most affected.
Wonderful. So what was the, I've since had a major career change from being, entirely a programmer to being more and more involved in this type of thing to now being kind of split or mostly dealing with this. Was there any like big moments that made you, has it been a subtle shift? What was it, your career changes like?
Oh yeah. So I first started doing this kind of work 4 or 5 years ago, when an incident happened in the Ruby programming community, that really upset me. And I tell people, I have the job I do because I was angry on Twitter. Like that's my entire success story. I was angry and people listened. It was really frustrating to see that, so many people had so little regard for others. When I've experienced so many terrible things at conferences, I was used to, at that point in time, being the only woman at every single meetup that I went to. And it was hard to kind of feel isolated like that. So I started speaking up about it, started writing about it, doing research, both like academic research as well as community surveys and that kind of thing to figure out what actually was going on, why, and what we could do about it. And it's just kind of become what it has now. All of my community work, so working on AlterConf, working on Fund Club, all of my writing is all funded directly by the community. So I get donations that fund that work. So I don't have to worry about choosing between my consulting paid work so I can feed my cats and keep my lights on at home, and doing work that is really the reason that I'm focusing on these kinds of things. So I get that that direct connection to the community, acknowledging the work that I do and spreading the work that I do and that kind of thing. And it's been really awesome to see. I mean, I never expected to be in this place. It's very weird when I think back on it and like look at the path that my career has taken. But it's cool to choose my own fate and to be able to do the right thing and not worry about the consequences, because I can't be fired, right? Like I work for myself, so I'm very lucky.
You have made some pretty kind of what I think of as kind of badass moves occasionally. Some, I think, in the past, I don't know how big of a role this plays in your life anymore, but you'd have like, listen, I do a bunch of writing. I do a bunch of diversity work. A lot of it is unpaid, unfortunately. So you had like a, know, just support Ash kind of monthly donation kind of thing. But then like one of the people that ran it was kind of a shit or whatever. And so like just like threw it away and started over on one where the owner of the thing wasn't that way. And it's like, man, that's ballsy and dangerous to like take away like a major income source and start over, kind of probably knowing that not as many people are going to make the move. They just didn't hear about it or just don't feel like it anymore or whatever. And those are like major like life, like those got to be tough decisions to make.
Yeah, I mean, because that was, I mean, at that point in time, I wasn't doing as much consulting. So that was my entire livelihood. But I don't know, I try really hard to live in the most ethical, and I don't want to say moral, because there's so many religious connotations to that. But I try to live by my values. And like, giving money to a guy who supports Nazis wasn't really on the top of my list. So that big move was made without, I mean, I was a little bit stressed out about the money part, but I definitely didn't lose any sleep over it. And I'm very blessed that a lot of people followed me over and continue to support my work. And they make a lot of what I do possible. And so I'm very thankful for that.
So some of the stuff that you know is just through life experience. Some of it is perhaps self-evident, you know. Some of it comes through, you literally have to learn and level up. And I don't know a fraction of what you know, but I've, in the, you know, the last many years, I've certainly leveled up my understanding. I'm sure that's the case for Dave as well. I could ask you for recommendations, but more like I'm kind of interested in how to level people up on a larger scale than that. For example, the first time I think when you hear something like somebody like me learns about something like white privilege or male privilege, that feels weird. Like I've never encountered that ever before. Say, I almost guarantee 3 years ago or even 2 years ago, I probably never heard that ever in my life. And at first you kind of feel like, I think stage one of hearing a phrase like that is like a little resentment or something like nothing's ever been handed to me. I don't have any privilege kind of thing. And then maybe you learn more about it, or maybe it sinks in a little bit. But I feel like those are like hard things to learn about, especially if they're like directed at you. Is there like a path to that? Is there just have to be some like long-term exposure and level acceptance? Is there something you can read, or do you just have to – I don't know. You know what I mean? When you know I'm trying to ask, I'm not articulating it very well.
No, I totally know what you mean. This is something that I have tried to replicate through my years of doing this work. Because, I mean, there's so many different moving pieces to this that even I learn something new every day, right? I'm, like I said before, I'm a fairly privileged person. I'm a white person in the United States, which is about as much privilege as you can get, right? I'm a very lucky person. A lot has been handed to me without me seeing it, because that's just the way that society is built. And I've learned through a few different means. One is following people that aren't like me on Twitter. That has kind of been a huge one. What do people live with every single day? You know, and just listening. You know, how am I intentionally or unintentionally or passively benefiting from other people being marginalized? So just listening to people on Twitter was huge. I also started a book club around social justice issues so I could read more. And I put a list together, and that's also on my website. But one book that I would recommend reading for everybody is Bell Hooks' Feminism is for Everybody. And it kind of gives you the 101 about what this system, when we talk about things like marginalization and oppression and privilege, what that actually is. You know, it's not something, for the most part, when we talk about privilege, it's not personal, right? Like, because you are a white man, regardless of how you grew up, regardless of anything else in your life, any circumstance, you get handed a lot of things without realizing it because society is set up that way. So how do you start to recognize that? And how do you start to use that privilege for good instead of evil, right? So what kinds of things are you talking about, educating yourself about, you know, correcting your friends when they say things? You're going to have to beep that too. I'm sorry. When they say bad things, or when somebody calls you out on something, not taking offense, just taking a breath and going to learn more about it so you understand where your mistake was, and really being humble about it. So much of this work, because humans are squishy and it's so many different gray areas, and context is really hard for us to understand from each of our individual worldviews, is just listening and learning and reading, making mistakes and correcting them, you know, trying to do better in the future. And everybody can get there. I mean, I know feminism is a bad word to a lot of people, but I'm a feminist, and I've only been a feminist really for 6 years. And I feel like I have learned so much in that 6 years, that my life is so much better, and I've been able to use my privilege to do good things. I hope good things. I have definitely made mistakes along the way, and you will too, and that's perfectly fine. But hopefully, as you go on, you'll make fewer and fewer mistakes. But yeah, definitely follow people that are different than you on Twitter. Pick up Feminism is for Everybody by Bell Hooks. And there are quite a few like 101 reader lists, like if you're a big reader like I am, that talk about different aspects of marginalization and privilege on my website, ashstride.com.
Nice. Nice. That's good. You know, I definitely have friends who just, you know, you just whatever, for whatever kind of person they are, they just are like, nothing's been handed to me. They lived a life that wasn't great, but they're still, it doesn't mean they don't have these privileges still.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know? And it's a really hard thing because we take it personally, and it doesn't have anything to do with you personally. Like when we talk about things like policing in America, like before I was talking about, we always make sure we get security guards that don't look like police, right? As a white person, I am not raised in a culture that is fearful of police. And there are many people who have, you know, very many family members who are in prison, who have been harmed by police officers. Like, we don't realize, but like, that's a privilege, right? Like, I'm not going to be pulled over in the United States for my skin color because I'm a white person. That's not saying something bad about me. That's saying something about our society and something that we have to change, especially as white people. And that's a system that we benefit from, right? So don't take it personally. Take a breath, step back, and figure out where you went wrong and just change it going forward.
It sounds like we're collectively suffering from the works on my machine.
Yes.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
In a cultural dynamic.
Works on my machine.
Yeah, and I mean, we just have to know that not everybody has the same experience as us. Like, that's a really tough thing for a lot of people to realize. Not everybody has the same experience that we do. So just take a step back.
Well, and that might be if somebody has listened to this whole episode, and I hope you have, but maybe they've disagreed with you, Ash, or I know you have people who disagree with you. I mean, maybe that's the lesson, right? Is you come from a different experience. Chris and I come from a different experience, but more or less the same experience. So I hope people have heard what you've said and kind of taken it to heart, because I think it's important, and hopefully we'll start seeing positive change.
There's so much to learn too. I mean, it wasn't even 2 years ago when I would be the kind of guy who would like defend people making dick jokes at conference. Not that specific one I'm mentioning that I'm sure you're all aware of, but I'd be like, I can make a dick joke. What the heck, man? I'm just out for the laughs, man. You know, like even that's like something that I look back on and being like, ugh, I was that guy like not so long ago, not realizing, not listening, not understanding that type of thing makes people uncomfortable, doesn't make for a particularly inclusive public event and that kind of thing, you know. And that's fairly like, you know, even as something as feels like as obvious as it is now to me, it wasn't not so long ago. And I'm sure a lot of the things that we've talked about in this show aren't particularly comfortable to everyone listening out there. So this is kind of like a legit sorry, not sorry episode.
Yeah. And you know, that's perfectly fine. I mean, I was literally just talking yesterday about thinking back on the things that I had said or done or thought you know, even in months previous that were not good, that I'm not proud of. And everybody's got those. And that discomfort is okay. That's normal, right? Because it's where our ideas of the world are being shooken up. And that's perfectly fine. And being empathetic to other people's plights in this day and age is a radical act, right? Taking a second to think about somebody who is not like me, who doesn't come from an experience that I come from, and thinking about why they make the decisions that they do or act the way that they do, that is a radical act. It's revolutionary, you know, especially in this industry where people are being threatened and harassed and leaving the industry in droves because other people aren't doing those things. So, I don't know. Be brave. Be bold.
Well, thanks. I think that's a that's a great place to end it. So, Ash, thank you so much for coming on the show. If people aren't following you on Twitter, how can they do that? And then what's one thing, the last final thing you'd like to plug before you leave?
Yeah, so you can pretty much find me as Ash Dryden everywhere on the internet. There's a silent E, so it's A-S-H-E Dryden. So I'm Ash Dryden on Twitter. AshDryden.com is my blog. One last thing I'd like to plug. Oh, that's a good question. Right now we're raising money with an organization called Sound Off to cover all of our costs relating to sign language interpreters and live captioners. So it'd be awesome if you get in on that. I'll tweet a link to it after we finish here.
Great. Well, appreciate it. Thank you very much. And thank you, listener, for downloading this new podcast of your choice. Be sure to star, heart, favorite it up so people know about this show. That's how people find out. And that's how Chris and I make the big bucks in podcasting, and we really appreciate that. If you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs because people want to hire you.
They sure do. And, as a matter of fact, I have one specifically to share with you now that's a pretty darn good looking job for lots of different reasons, which I think is cool. The company is called Easy, EEZY.com. And there's like, they make some of those kind of like resource sites, like VectEasy is like a site where there's tons of free vectors and stuff on it, but they have a number of them in the same thing. I don't even know if that's all they do, but it's one of the projects that they have, and they're looking for a senior front end developer with Rails experience. So that would be me in another life probably, but yeah. So you're doing front end work with Rails, so HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Of course, the things that you probably know about or have interest in, if you listen to Shop Talk Show at all, we'll have a link to this particular job in the show notes. One of the cool things about the job is that it's work from home. So it's remote, which is pretty darn wonderful, and is the kind of, you know, I think more and more tech jobs should offer this, because, you know, I do it. It's pretty great, and it's fairly inclusive. Let's say you're you have some kind of disability of some kind that makes working from home a lot more comfortable, or if you have a family situation that's like that, or you take care of other people that requires for you to be home, you can do this job. I think, which is pretty great, and it's a senior level job too, which is pretty awesome. So we'll have the link to that. It's a senior front-end developer with Rails at easy.com. Come to our show notes and click the link for that.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. And we are starting out our fifth season. We're heading into the episode 200, and we're very excited. So thank you, everybody. And thank you, Ash, for coming on the show today. Chris, you got anything else?
That's it. ShopTalkShow.com.